Good evening and welcome to Health Matters, the Mental Health Edition. I'm your host, Dr. Shelley Visconti, psychologist, counselor, and marriage and family therapist. Our topic tonight is anxiety. I invite our listeners to call in with comments and questions. Our number is 1-800-552-8502. This evening we have as our guests licensed professional counselors Mary Dittman and Courtney. Courtney, say your last name so I don't massacre it.
Espinan.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay. So, Mary, tell us a little bit about yourself, Providence Counseling Group, and also David Raines Community Health Center.
Thank you. So happy to be here today. I work full-time at David Raines Community Health Center with Dr. Blanca Osorio and Vicki Spieschen, her physician assistant. And I work with Cindy Willis, an LPC, and Elizabeth Phillips, LPC, in my private practice that I've had for about 2 years.
And Courtney, tell us about you and your private practice.
Awesome. Hello, listeners. So I'm originally from the New Orleans area. August will make 5 years that I've been in Shreveport. I found my way up here in 2014 to complete my grad school internship requirements. And I graduated from Northwestern State University in December of 2015 and then began fulfilling the supervision requirements in order to become a licensed professional counselor in Louisiana. So I've been seeing clients individually when I was provisionally licensed as a counselor in 2016. And I was also working with addicts and alcoholics in early recovery. So I continued doing that. And now I work on an individual basis with individuals that are 18 years or older and currently experiencing anxious symptoms or an increase in their already present anxious symptoms due to a variety of stressors in life. I am a huge New Orleans Saints fan, a proud season ticket holder, and a dog mama to Clay and Coda.
I want to invite our listeners to join our conversation this evening on anxiety. Call in with your question or comment at 1-800-552-8502. So I want to start by talking about anxiety and how common it is. So how common is anxiety? How frequently do you run into anxiety within your patient populations?
Very common. A lot of our clients that have a diagnosis of depression also have half of them have the anxiety problems, and it's very common in my practice to have also that anxiety problem.
Yeah, I kind of refer to anxiety and depression as best friends. Where you see one, you will often see the other one. They often co-occur together.
Yes.
Yeah.
I've noticed too, a lot of times when someone is experiencing depression or anxiety, as one increases, so does the other. So mm-hmm. They even, you know, play off each other in the sense of the symptoms that present as they continue to increase.
Yeah. Because, I mean, being anxious is it's a pretty miserable feeling. And so that can lead to depression. And then also depression can lead to anxiety, and they often feed off of each other.
Yes.
So why do people develop anxiety?
Anxiety can be just a normal reaction, and a lot of us just have anxiety, but it's when it's excessive, it's when it's a problem. So just, you know, today's talk show, it brings a little bit of anxiety. So I think all of us kind of experience it, but when it just takes over your life, where it just your functioning is affected, you know. So presentations for school, jobs, anything that's a challenge and a change, a little bit of anxiety is good because it keeps us on our toes. It keeps us, you know, doing really well to do our best. But when it gets to where it's overpowering and excessive, that's a problem.
Yeah, I often, you know, say that a little anxiety, as you said, can be motivating. It can be a good thing. If we had no anxiety about going to work every day, then we may not show up. You know,
right.
If we had no anxiety about, you know, where, you know, how dinner's going to be cooked and how, you know, things are going to get done, then these things may not get done. But because we have a little bit of anxiety, that motivates us to make sure that things are taken care of. I want to invite our listeners to join our conversation on anxiety. Call with your question or comment at 1-800-552-8502. 952-8502. So as we said, everybody, you know, experiences anxiety from time to time. It's often common for guests when they come on the program before to say, you know, I'm feeling a little anxious. You know, and these are professionals that are used to giving presentations and things like that. So we all have anxiety from time to time. But how does typical anxiety differ from problematic anxiety?
So I have a like an analogy, I guess, that I want to use that I think our listeners will really be able to relate to. Typical anxiety is something I think that we've all likely experienced at some point in life. Things like feeling nervous or antsy or even fearful, like an event before a first date or maybe speaking in front of a group. And we're going to feel those things before and leading up to the event. But once the event has passed, those symptoms relieve, like they're resolved. Problematic anxiety differs from a typical or situational anxiety in that a person with problematic anxiety experiences a decreased quality of life due to those symptoms, and the symptoms aren't caused by or related to any specific event. So if we can kind of think of it as having a cold or the flu versus maybe a chronic medical condition like diabetes. So, you know, when we have the flu or cold, like we feel kind of gross for a few days, but it resolves, it goes away, like we get back at it. That was that. But in a chronic medical condition like diabetes, we'd have to learn to manage it. There would be things that could make our condition worse, or like the increase of symptoms, just as it would with problematic anxiety. And that condition isn't going to resolve. There is no guaranteed end date of it. As with like problematic anxiety, you don't ever really know. It becomes more of a managing it versus the typical anxiety that goes away like on its own once that event or whatever has passed. Mm-hmm.
So if someone is experiencing problematic anxiety, not just typical kind of situational anxiety, but anxiety that's more problematic and is interfering with their daily functioning, what should they do?
Well, every time that a client comes into my office, I always say, get a physical. Always check with your primary care doctor. So I think, start with your primary care doctor. Check to make sure there isn't something that is affecting their mood that is based on some kind of physiological condition. So go to the primary care doctor. Of course, seek a counselor. And if there is med management needs, then go to the psychiatrist or a psychologist.
Yeah, because there are some medical issues such as like a thyroid, some kind of thyroid dysfunction, or other types of medical issues that can look very much like a psychological anxiety disorder, but it's actually medical in its origins or the roots of the problem. And so coming to counseling, while it might be beneficial in some ways, it's not going to resolve that underlying medical issue. So it is always important to go get that physical just to rule out any possible medical etiology. And once that's ruled out, then, you know, maybe start looking around for a counselor who is knowledgeable in treating anxiety. I invite our listeners to join our conversation on anxiety. Call with your question or comment at 1-800-552-8502. So how is anxiety treated? What are the different types of treatments that might be available for someone who is experiencing problematic anxiety?
I recommend psychotherapy, which is, you know, commonly known as talk therapy. One of the approaches, cognitive behavioral therapy, is a specific type of therapy that's been proven to be the most effective form of psychotherapy to treat anxiety. Through psychotherapy, an individual would work with a licensed professional to get a better idea of what might be behind those anxious symptoms, different ways they can manage them, things that help, things that don't help, and with an ultimate goal of alleviating those symptoms. And in some cases, you know, prescription medication may be added in conjunction with that psychotherapy.
Yes, in a collaboration with cognitive behavioral therapy, it is always about asking the client, you know, what are your significant symptoms? Working together to identify the triggers, and building that relationship so they trust you to talk about what are those symptoms. Get familiar with the triggers, the symptoms that lead to severe problems. Identify the thoughts that maybe precede the problem. Identifying thoughts, then reframing thoughts. So cognitive therapy is very good because it allows the client to really take homework home and list things, be more self-aware of what's actually reinforcing the problem, making it worse. What are they avoiding? So cognitive therapy is really great. I also talk to clients about mindfulness, you know, just slowing their brains down. Because when you have anxiety, you're constantly worrying, and those worries just cause you to, you know, constrict your breathing. So you're not really thinking clearly. And so mindfulness helps them to slow down, be in that moment so that they can make better decisions, be clearer about the things that they want to do, identify goals also with mindfulness. So I like to work with mindfulness in conjunction with cognitive behavioral therapy.
I completely agree with the practice of mindfulness and, you know, teaching it to our clients or every individuals that come in and they're experiencing symptoms of anxiety. And it sounds like something so simple. Like, how did we like lose sight of it, or why didn't I think of this myself? And that's usually what I find the solution is. Like, it's something really, really simple that we just didn't think of on our own. It could be something as simple as going outside and really focusing in on maybe a tree that's near you. Like, what are those different shades of colors in the tree? What are the different shapes that you see? And when we do that, we are focusing those thoughts on that tree, on those leaves, on those different colors, so that the racing thoughts and other things that may be, you know, flying through our head slow down, give us a little break, and then we can better, ground ourselves, get back into that present moment, focus on breathing. So it's a really great way to kind of, I want to say, maybe gain back feeling of control of that situation. And physically, it gives great outcome, as you're not breathing as heavily, you're not on edge as much. It's like, wow, why didn't I think of this on my own?
Yeah, because often people will get into kind of a thinking tailspin, you know, that the anxiety and then another anxious thought and then another anxious thought, which leads to another anxious thought. And if you can help the client to slow down their mind, and then often people will think that over-planning or overthinking or every possible outcome or every possibility that gives them some kind of sense of control. But it's really not, because there's no amount of thinking that's going to completely prepare you for everything in life. There's no way that you can do that. And so what it often leads to is just increased anxiety when we're constantly trying to control our environment and control everything around us, and we can't. And so that's just more and more frustrating, and the anxiety grows. And so if we can learn to kind of let go of some of these things and just focus on what's going on around us more, rather than worrying about what might happen or what could happen. It's not that we shouldn't be prepared. We need to be prepared and think about the future, but really perseverating on things doesn't really get us anywhere.
No, just a bigger problem.
Yes. More anxiety.
Yeah. I invite our listeners to join our conversation on anxiety. Call with your question or comment at 1-800-552-8502. So what are the different types of anxiety disorders? Because there's generalized anxiety, but then there are also different types of anxiety. So what are those types of different anxiety disorders?
There's social anxiety disorders. People with social anxiety disorders have intense fear of being embarrassed, people talking about them, being judged. And so, they may be very shaky when talking. They may fear being in groups of people. So social anxiety is a type of anxiety. Also, panic disorder. It involves intense, unexpected episodes of panic with physical symptoms such as racing heart, shortness of breath, chest pain, dizziness. And when these attacks happen, the person may think they're having a heart attack and they, you know, rush to the hospital. And, you know, it's you know, oftentimes a panic disorder. Agoraphobia. People escape or fear being in situations where they can't get away from people. They have a panic attack in a crowded theater or just being surrounded by people. So, and then they fear the situations where they have this panic. And so they're more reclusive. They avoid being around people.
So, and there are other disorders that aren't necessarily anxiety disorders that anxiety can go along with. As we said, depression, post-traumatic stress disorder, there's often an anxiety component. So there are other disorders that also can have an anxiety component, but that social anxiety, panic disorder, and agoraphobia are what we consider the anxiety disorders, and then also generalized anxiety, which is just kind of a general worry and difficulty controlling the worry. There's just a lot of worrying and second guessing and just overthinking things, but not just overthinking, it really interfering with your ability to function day to day. And the same with the social anxiety. As we said, we all or most of us experience some anxiety when we're public speaking or things like that. But this is just an almost paralyzing fear of even the thought of having to speak in front of someone. And then with agoraphobia, the fear of going out. As you said, people often become reclusive and may not leave the house. And then with panic disorder, it often does feel like a medical problem. And people will go to the emergency room or things like that, thinking that they're having a heart attack, because it's a really intense physiological anxiety, manifestation of anxiety. I want to invite our listeners to call with your question or comment. The number is 1-800-552-8502. So how is anxiety diagnosed?
Most of us use that. The Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, the 5th edition. So it has a group of symptoms that are characteristic of different diagnoses. And, you know, it's a summary of symptoms. We use it to have like a checklist of, you know, what are the symptoms, how repetitive are they? And if clients have these symptoms for 6 months or longer, then it's usually a diagnosis of anxiety.
And we have a caller. We have Mary from Gloucester. Go right ahead with your question or comment, Mary.
I guess it was really more of a comment. I've dealt with depression for a long time, and it was easily handled with, you know, some of the medicines that are out there for that. But anxiety came into my life probably in the last couple of years, and that combination was just debilitating. And also going through menopause, so you throw in the whole hormone.
Yeah, the hormones can throw it out of whack. Yeah.
Exactly. And I knew that the thing that was really keeping me in that bad place was a toxic work environment. But the challenge with that is you got to pay the bills. You're looking to maintain some sort of health insurance. And so, yeah, anxiety goes up again. And there were some pretty hopeless moments in my life that, you know, medicines couldn't help. Psychotherapy definitely helped me hang on. But I wish there were better answers out there for this sort of stuff, because it was pretty bleak for a very long period of time. And I feel like now I'm just repairing some of the brokenness in me. And I don't think I'll ever be fully repaired, but it's way more manageable.
So was changing, were you able to change jobs and that helped with your anxiety, or were there any specific techniques or anything that helped with your anxiety in particular?
Well, the job change certainly made a difference, a significant difference, and it was really the main thing. And, you know, that didn't come readily because you're, again, you're still trying to find something that can pay your bills. And so that's a challenge. But it was really, if I found that whether my psychotherapist or my hormone person or those folks, if they were more readily available to me on the quick fly rather than, oh, we'll see you in another 2 months.
Yeah.
It just doesn't cut it. You really need tweaking and help consistently along the way.
Yeah, and having access to mental health providers and physicians, it can be difficult.
It absolutely
yeah.
can. And, you know, that makes you feel more alone. And I wish I felt like I had more to offer in terms of helping yourself get through it, but it's tough. It's so tough. And, you know, all I can say is if you can find people that can really help you, you know, sometimes it's day to day, sometimes it's week to week, but it's way more than once a month or once every 2 months when you're trying to get through it.
Well, it sounds like you were persistent in your search for answers and trying to figure out environmental changes that you can make and, you know, the medications. So definitely medications with counseling always work best.
Yep.
Yeah.
But you have to fight for yourself in terms of not giving up. The depression makes you want to give up.
Yes.
But you have to really be a strong advocate for yourself, and I have a wonderful husband that also is very supportive. So I know other people are not so lucky, but you have to be your own best advocate and really push for what you need, not waiting for people to, we'll see you here or there, or let's try this, give it 2 months. It's just not enough. So
thank you for your call, Mary. We appreciate it. We have another caller. We have Jeremy from Alexandria. Jeremy, go right ahead with your question or comment.
Yes, ma'am. It's for my wife, mainly. She's an introvert, and after we was dating for a while and got married, I kind of helped her coach through kind of the social anxiety of being around people, and then also, like, she's very, like, OCD to where she's meticulous about every part in her life. And then recently we had our second child together. And after having the second child, I don't know, it was postpartum depression maybe or what it was. But, like, she started to get, like, depressed really bad. And so she got on medicine, and it seems like it was probably like instantly after having the baby, you know, that it kicked in. And it was to the point to where she started having panic attacks, you know. I know y'all was talking about panic attacks.
And those earlier. Are pretty intense, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Right. So we have rode the, I lived by a ferry when I was a kid, and we rode it when we were dating, and she didn't really have one. Well, this year she rode it after having our second born, and it just, boom, you know, she just started having a panic attack. And so I guess my question, when she missed her medicine, she'll have a panic attack or have a feeling that a panic attack's coming on, she'll say, you know. Is there something, maybe is it from a hormone imbalance? And also, is there other things besides medication that she could do to try to, I guess, ease her mind?
Well, it does sound like the hormones really affected her and made it worse. Like we were saying earlier, medication helps, but finding a professional that can really, she can go to just have those therapy sessions, because, you know, it's wonderful that she has your support and that you've kind of coached her through, as you said earlier, through her OCD and anxiety, but now it seems like it's gotten a little bit worse and medication has helped, but she's kind of missed some doses. Definitely keep taking medication regularly, but maybe having someone to talk to other than a family member where she can learn coping skills from to really manage that daily anxiety.
Right. I would definitely recommend, you know, just encourage her to consider psychotherapy. You know, sometimes that's a lot easier than approaching someone and telling them what they need. So maybe just ask her to consider it. And then, you know, then you can encourage her, like, by letting her know how much you care about her, how much you've seen her improvement, and that this may be another way to help manage that anxiety. So with the, you know, working with a therapist, she would be able to maybe identify some of those things that are contributing to the anxiety. You know, she, of course, you know, you mentioned your second child, so she's been a mother already, but now she's got two kids. You know, what's that like? Is she going to be able to handle it? She may not even know that those are the thoughts or kind of fears that she's experiencing, but through questions and just being challenged with those kind of things, she may be able to identify it, and then once it's identified, she can work through it.
Yeah, and you know, encouraging her to go to a gynecologist, get her hormone levels checked, because if your hormones are off, it can make you miserable. And if there, you know, a therapist can help her if there are specific situations that tend to cause her to be particularly anxious, the therapist can work through, there's something called systematic desensitization. That's a technique that sometimes if there are specific situations or things that trigger anxiety or panic attacks. There are also some techniques to help people when they're experiencing a panic attack to better tolerate it. A panic attack is never fun, but to kind of learn how to ride the storm out and be able to deal a little more effectively with the panic attack. So there are lots of different techniques that a counselor can teach her to help her with her anxiety. You know, maybe offer to go to that first appointment with her, and that may help her kind of motivate her and decrease her anxiety about meeting a new person and opening up to a new person. But then, like I said, also, you know, encouraging her maybe to go see her gynecologist, get those hormone levels checked, and make sure that we're taking care of the psychological component, but then also any medical component that might also be contributing to the problem. Thank you so much for your call, Jeremy. I want to invite our listeners to call and join our conversation on anxiety. Our number is 1-800-552-8502. So I want to talk a little bit about each of the different kind of anxiety disorders and some of the specific treatments for those different disorders. So what about social anxiety? How is social anxiety, what are some of the most effective treatments for that?
Well, definitely for social anxiety, people will avoid situations like being around others. Maybe they will avoid taking classes because, you know, taking classes, they'll be having to be around people. So help the client identify and find some coping skills to be more reassured. I mean, mindfulness and breathing techniques help in dealing with social anxiety, and just kind of helping them to make small steps. If they've avoided the grocery store, I say, well, just go park in front of the grocery store, you know, the first day. So in visualizing maybe those steps, little baby steps, until they progressively get better and then can actually do that activity around actual people. I had a client that has severe social anxiety, and her boyfriend bought her a ticket to go to Let the Good Times Roll Festival. So I asked her to, okay, look up the venue, familiarize yourself with the actual venue, look at the website, see, you know, visualize, breathe through your visualization, go and drive to the place before the actual event. And so she went walking and she familiarized with the actual event. And then she was able to you know, do steps like that until she was able to go. And so she was so excited to tell me that she had actually been able to go. She didn't stay very long, but she was able to walk through and then get back in the car, you know. So that was so just maybe baby steps, little steps to get accustomed to something that they've been avoiding.
Yeah, I think people often get frustrated and really disappointed with themselves because they're like, I should be able to tolerate going to Walmart on a Saturday, you know, but Walmart on a Saturday is anxiety provoking for any of us, you know,
any day.
So, you know, you start, as you said, you know, go to the parking lot, just sit in the parking lot and then go in and just walk in and walk right back out. Don't buy anything. Don't walk around. Just walk in, walk right back out. And then walk in, maybe walk an aisle, and then walk out. You know, just taking those little baby steps so that you have the confidence to make it to the next step. You know, if the social anxiety is talking to people, then, you know, you start small and, you know, maybe ask somebody in the grocery store that works in the grocery store, you know, where's the rice or, you know, whatever. And then you work your way up to, you know, a dinner party or things like that. But you don't start with that because then that person feels this significant sense of failure, you know, I've messed up again. And so it's really important to start small and give yourself manageable challenges rather than, you know, trying to overcome it all at one time.
I think that's great, you know, advice and things to consider. I know a lot of times with social anxiety, sometimes it may be the environment itself. Maybe it's not actually the other people around, but, you know, we mentioned Walmart. Like, I know that the bright lights and all the noise, so, you know, they've got the speaker overhead and there's other customers in the store, and then we've got all the beeps of the registers, like the bright lights, all the different colors, the products, people everywhere, different noises that can overstimulate someone. And so the social anxiety may come from just being in that situation. Well, what can we do about that? You know, we can't not go to a store for the rest of our lives, even though like there's some delivery apps that may help. But things like that, you know, there's different ways we can go about it. I think that going to the store at a time when they're less busy, that may be helpful. Bringing headphones so that you only have that one noise you're listening to, kind of make it something enjoyable. So save your favorite podcast for when you've got to go to the grocery store that day. And, you know, maybe that's like a different way to keep your mind off of the things that are bothering you so badly. And you know what? Give yourself permission to try it out. And if it's too much, you can leave.
Yeah, you can always back off.
You know, yeah. So it's like giving ourselves that permission to, okay, I tried this. I got in the store. That's, you know, that's better. That's improvement from when I parked my car in the lot. You know, don't beat yourself up about it. We've got to, you know, take those baby steps, but also acknowledge it.
Yes, and I think a lot of people will give up before they even try a solution. And so it's good to have small steps and reward themselves for having accomplished something. Because when they think, you know, one little step was too hard, instead of trying again in a different day or different time of the day, they just completely give up. So it's you know, it takes work to feel better. There isn't a magic pill. There isn't anything that we can do. It's actually work.
Yeah, and there are apps, there are different online tools, but then also just working with a therapist, they can sit down with you and help you. Okay, so you want to get prepared for going to this concert, you want to be prepared for giving this presentation. You know, how can we take this and make it into little bite-sized chunks for you to kind of become, you know, more comfortable with, and then take on, you know, the big one, you know. I want to invite our listeners to join our conversation. We are discussing anxiety. Call with your question or comment at 1-800-552-8502. So we've talked a little bit about panic disorder, but I want to talk about how it differs from generalized anxiety disorder or just intense anxiety, because panic disorder is different than just significant anxiety. A lot of times I'll have people come in and say, I had a panic attack, and then I have them you know, describe it to me, and I'm like, no, that's really significant anxiety, but that's not a panic attack.
Absolutely. And it's sometimes I like to say, like, if you've had a panic attack, you know the difference. And, you know, panic attacks, they kind of hit us out of nowhere. You know, it's unexpected, it doesn't have a trigger, and it's this sudden, intense feeling of fear that lasts for several minutes. Those few minutes feel like eternity. It's physical symptoms that happen, so hyperventilating, having chest pains, even kind of getting dizzy or lightheaded, feeling like maybe parts of our body are tingling or numb, like they're not really associated with us anymore. So that type of situation, you know, maybe every now and then with generalized anxiety, we might get some discomfort in our stomach, but it's not persistent, and we can identify maybe what triggered those butterflies in our stomach. Whereas with a panic attack, it just hits you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, panic attacks are intense, and they often feel like you're having a medical emergency. So what about panic disorder? How is that treated?
Well, with, you know, anxiety in general, we've discussed the psychotherapy. I think that it all plays a huge part in these different, types of anxiety disorders, and the same with panic disorder. So, you know, these attacks are going to come on and seemingly have, like, no cause behind it. But through psychotherapy, maybe, you know, with your therapist, you start kind of making notes of what went on before that happened. Had I been feeling that way for a few days, and then maybe it was kind of like it all built up and happened. So, you know, that's one way that I think panic disorder can be approached, through the use of psychotherapy. And then again, there are medications that could help kind of maybe even out those panic attacks, as well as fast-acting prescription medications that will act in the moment of those panic attacks, which would, you know, require visiting with your primary care doctor, seeing a psychiatrist, seeing a psychologist that has prescribing privileges, to really figure out if that is the best approach and an appropriate use of those medications.
And sometimes just with a lot of mental health disorders, and also this applies to panic disorder, you know, are you getting enough sleep? Are you eating right? Are you, you know, just really making sure that you're taking care of yourself so that none of, you know, it's not being brought on by being overly tired or being brought on by drops in blood sugar or things like that, that, you know, that you're making sure that you're really taking care of yourself so that you're not kind of compromised and setting yourself up to have a panic attack. I want to invite our listeners to join our conversation on anxiety. Call with your question or comment at 1-800-552-8502. So I want to talk a little bit about phobias. I don't think we've talked much about phobias yet. What is a phobia?
A severe fear. So phobia is, you know, we a lot of times we have phobias. Fear of heights. Fear of, you know, when we avoid something that is feared. Fear of flying. Fear of, you know, you avoid it to... You will go around and fear bridges. So people have fear bridges. They will not go over a bridge. They will go 30 miles out of the way just to avoid something that they feared, like that.
Yeah. So a phobia is a really strong, irrational fear of something that poses little or actually no danger at all. Like, to define it as a phobia, the fear needs to cause a level of impairment in someone's life. So if we think about somebody, maybe they have a phobia of lizards. And because of this phobia, they don't leave their house after dark, because if it's dark, they're unable to see these lizards, they're unable to avoid them. So then it kind of turns into, I mean, being stranded at home, basically, because of this fear. Now, what's that lizard going to do to us? Not much. It's not going to come after us. It's more scared of us than we are of it. But it's that just intense fear of something that really introduces very little or no actual danger at all.
Yeah, I mean, you can, you know, we can develop a phobia to anything, anything at all. But it really is that it's not just like I don't particularly like to drive over bridges. I don't particularly like heights, but I don't reroute, you know, the way I'm going because I'm going to go over a bridge. You know, I just painted my house and it has very high ceilings. I wasn't thrilled about being on ladders for hours, but I did it. You know, so it's something that it's not just uncomfortable. It's really interfering with your ability to go to work, to leave your house, to function just kind of normally day to day because of this intense fear of something or someone. So what, you know, we kind of talked about that you can have phobias for anything. Have y'all found any particular themes or types of phobias that seem to be common within your patients?
I have worked with quite a few people, agoraphobia. Mm-hmm. So that would be the fear of, well, a lot of them, it's just leaving the house. Mm-hmm. So it's different from maybe someone with social anxiety, as the social anxiety would be rooted in maybe those social interactions when they're out in public. Maybe it's due to a lack of self-esteem or lack of confidence, whereas the agoraphobia is just fear of going outside their safe place. It's kind of what I like to call it, because something bad is going to happen. We don't, probably irrational, we don't really have anything to back up this something that's going to happen, but this huge fear that it's just debilitating. A lot of those people haven't left their home mm-hmm. in years. However, through psychotherapy, you know, they're able to now go on those little trips, go out for coffee. Like, that's a huge, huge, huge thing for people with agoraphobia. You know, I think a lot of us are familiar with the term claustrophobia. And then specific phobias of animals. You know, I think being in the South, there's a lot of people that are just deathly afraid of roaches and ants, like spiders. So I think, you know, those are some that I've personally worked with clients, and then ones that I think are kind of like a lay terms that everyone has some type of familiarity with.
Yeah, I think when you mention agoraphobia and somebody comes in and, you know, they've put off the appointment, you know, the first thing is, you know, you actually came.
Yeah.
This is mm-hmm. great. This is a great beginning.
Yeah.
If you did this today, you can do it again.
And that, you know, kind of goes back to acknowledging those steps, acknowledging that little success. Like, okay, well, you got in the parking lot. That means, you know, you didn't just get out the house, but you got out the house, you got in the car, you stayed in the car all the way here, you got to the parking lot. Like, those are all huge things that I think when someone gets bogged down or starts beating themselves up on, these are the things we should be able to do and I can't do it, we forget that that's all really huge progress. Mm-hmm. Just getting there yes. is, you know, huge itself.
Highlighting those things that they have been able to do, like you said, because even getting dressed. So you thought about it and didn't stay in bed. So you thought about it and prepared. You combed your hair. And so just highlighting the little things that they may have taken for granted. And, you know, because they beat themselves up about it. Well, I'm just terrible and I'm no good, or, you know, I shouldn't or should do this.
Right.
So those shoulds that really mm-hmm. keep them stuck. So, just helping them be aware of their successes.
We have another caller. We have Tammy from Benton. Go right ahead with your question or comment, Tammy.
I have a question. I recently read an article about panic attacks and other forms of anxiety, and hopefully I'm remembering it correctly, but the study basically stated people that suffer from different forms of anxiety and panic attacks all had low vitamin B6 and iron, suggesting that if these levels are normal, then the person wouldn't suffer from these panic attacks and anxiety. Any thoughts on this matter to be true or false? And if you believe it to be true, is it more medical than mental health?
I think our chemistry absolutely affects us. And that's why number one is go to the primary care doctor, because they do a panel of tests and they, you know, they can, you know, identify if there's a hormonal problem. And vitamins, yes, I mean, maybe they're not lacking in vitamins. So I think it is a whole cluster of things that can affect our mood. And so getting that checkup from your doctor, I mean, it doesn't mean it's like maybe you're more predisposed if this or that. But I mean, I think there's so many different things that can affect you that if you start with the primary care doctor, follow a great diet regimen, exercise, it takes it all. It's not just a one thing.
Right. And, you know, Tammy, like, I haven't read this study or the article, but one of the criteria used to diagnose anxiety or an anxiety disorder is this, like, last little disclaimer that says the symptoms present in the absence of a medical condition that could be attributed to those things. So in the example that you've used, you know, an anxiety diagnosis may not have been correct, and that wasn't It wasn't as though it was incorrect and done on purpose, but these underlying factors of those vitamin deficiencies weren't known. And once they were known and it was treated, the anxious symptoms resolved. So I don't necessarily know that someone would be cured of anxiety or a phobia with those different treatments, like of the medication with vitamins, because in that situation it would actually have been a diagnosis given without maybe like all the pieces to the puzzle.
And what I usually recommend, because it is very confusing, you know, drink coffee, it's good for you. Don't drink coffee, it's terrible for you. Eat eggs. Eggs are great. No, don't eat eggs. They're evil. You know, so it is very confusing, all the information that's kind of thrown at us to try to decipher, you know, is this good information? Is this bad information? What I usually recommend is, you know, figure out what's your source. Is it People Magazine? Probably not the best, you know, place to be getting medical advice. You know, so, you know, look at the source of the information and, you know, see if the article cites any specific studies. Who did the study? Is this a university or someone like that? Or was it the manufacturer of specific supplements or something like that that did the research? Mm-hmm. So you really have to look at the source of the information and who is generating this data. Because often, you know, we will see commercials on television that will say, backed by clinical research. Well, who did the research and did they have any kind of incentive to try to make sure that the results came out one way or another? Because research data, it can be skewed. If you want research data to look a certain way, then you can design a study to make sure that you get those results. Just kind of looking at who generated the research and does it seem like a reputable, you know, is it the Mayo Clinic, you know, or is it, as I said, someone who is marketing a specific product that having this research is going to help to sell this product. So looking at those things can sometimes be helpful in deciphering, you know, should I put any faith in this information or not. And then, you know, if you don't know, you can always go to your doctor and or another professional, and they can help you to try to decipher, you know, is this legitimate information or not.
And there's websites for legitimate information, like the Anxiety and Depression Association of America, the National Institute of Mental Health. So you can do research about mental health and wellness through, you know, really great places.
I want to invite our listeners to join our conversation. This evening we are discussing anxiety. Call with your question or comment at 1-800-552-8502. Have y'all found any particular treatments that are effective for phobias?
Just the systematic desensitization, which is basically what we were talking about earlier. This, you know, taking little steps toward things. You know, if it is arachnophobia, you know, just first, you know, just saying the word, you know, and gradually maybe looking at pictures from very far away as you get closer and closer to actually just looking at pictures. So things like that, that are, you know, so that affect people so much that you have to be very careful and do it very slowly.
Yeah, I had a young man who had a intense fear of dogs. And so we started with, you know, with my office was in a big building. And so the office, I mean, the dog was just in the building. Nowhere near the office, our particular office, in another part of the building, but the dog was in the building. And then we had the dog in the office, but it was in another office that was, you know, the door was shut. And then we allowed the dog in the hallway, you know, and then the dog sat outside the office door. And then we let the dog inside the office, but it was all the way across the room. And finally, we were able to work up to the point where the little boy was able to feed the dog out of his hand.
Wow.
So, but it took, you know, it actually took about 6 weeks, which is a relatively short period of time.
Yeah.
So done correctly, systematic sensitization can be very effective.
I agree. I also, you know, think that with phobias, one way that I've kind of approached them at times is challenging those thoughts, challenging those fears behind it. So, you know, I may hear what someone shares with me and I may think like, oh my gosh, like that's not even really rational or reasonable, but that doesn't mean they're on that page. So I like to kind of, you know, get them to tell me more about it. So where does that fear come from? Or, you know, what is the worst case scenario? So then a lot of times it takes hearing it out loud to kind of catch yourself and be like, well, you know, actually now that I've said that, that doesn't really sound so reasonable. I think another important thing that we can try to do as therapists is there an event that happened that may be causing that huge phobia? So that would go back to post-traumatic stress, which we mentioned earlier, which is you know, an anxiety disorder. But in that situation, it may not be that desensitizing the client would be the first step. It may be addressing that trauma. And that would give us a better understanding of, let's say, you know, we go back to the client that you had afraid of the dog. Was he bit by a dog when he was younger?
He was. Yeah.
Oh, see, you know, like, yeah. So it, in that situation, is that fear really irrational? No. You know, that's something that actually did happen that, I mean, you don't want to stick your hand back in the fire once you know that you'll get burned. So I would think that kind of processing that trauma and then, you know, going along with that desensitization so that they are able to better cope.
Yes. So we talked about this a little bit earlier. Mary, you had kind of rattled off a few resources for information. Any other resources that y'all know of that are helpful that y'all use with your clients and patients regarding anxiety?
I love Dr. Amen. He is a neurologist that was a psychiatrist. He has a lot of books about retraining the brain, about your health through identifying those automatic negative thoughts, the ants, which can be overwhelming. If those ants are all over you, you can't do anything, you can't move. And so I love Dr. Amen. Of course, he does have a lot of things that he's referring to, those SPECT imaging of the brain and how that after therapy, you can see before and after a client with PTSD with just a terrible SPECT imaging of the brain. And then after therapy, you can actually see how much better they are. So therapy works. Therapy really works. But so I love Dr. Amen's books. He's got a ton of them.
Any other suggestions, Courtney?
Well, mine may not be as conventional or, you know, maybe things that we haven't thought of, but I'm going to go back to apps. I think it was just today that I suggested or just showed to a client different apps. So I have one, I think it's called Slumber, and it's to help with sleep. So anxiety that may come about, that racing mind when you're trying to get in bed and relax. And it, you know, there are apps for meditation that also can help with anxiety. I know that there are apps that can help track your mood. So I encourage clients to either use that app, because I would tell them like, well, hey, write these things down in your planner. So next time when you come, we can kind of go over it. And they look at me like I'm crazy because who writes things down in a planner anymore. They all like use their phones. So I've kind of had to adapt to making myself more aware of those resources just because that's where people have gone. So there are apps where you can track your mood and you can put in, you know, your mood for the day, and then you can customize certain moods. But I always encourage them, like, okay, well, when you put your mood in, tell me a little bit about that day. So if the client comes in and, you know, for another session and they've told me about feeling anxious within the last week, I might ask them to go ahead and pull that up and let's look at things that were going on around that time. Let's see if anything might be related. A lot of people do that through bullet journaling, but that goes back to having your book with you at all times. So I do think there's, you know, I don't want to say easier things, but maybe more convenient things since a lot of us rely on technology. There's a ton of different resources out there, you know, specifically like all these apps that we have now that are at literally the tips of our fingertips.
Mm-hmm. And YouTube has tons of meditation videos.
I love the honest guys. I try to find like a particular voice that doesn't bother me because I can get distracted by this annoying voice rather than like the guided meditation. Mm-hmm. The honest guys. Best. I always YouTube them.
And even Amazon and Netflix, they even have where you can it's like a show, but it's nothing but rain, sounds of rain or sounds of the ocean, or, you know, so sometimes it's helpful just to turn that on and, you know, sit and watch the ocean for a little while, you know, or the nice rain, or just listen to it. Sometimes that can be enough to kind of calm and center you and get your mind off of your worries. So we have just about a minute or so left. Any suggestions that you have? If we have a family member or a friend that is experiencing anxiety, what can we do to help them? Is there anything that we can do as loved ones of someone who has anxiety? You know, what can we do to support them?
I think be understanding. I think a lot of people say, well, get over it. It's fine. It's over. It's done. You know, you can't just get over it. It takes time. And so just be an understanding that this is just an illness like any other illness. So it's something serious. It takes time and effort and help.
Yeah. I also think, you know, when we're seeing a loved one going through something distressful and we don't want it for them, we kind of try to fix it for them. You know, take a step back and maybe ask them, is there anything I can do, or what can I do that might be helpful?
Yes.
Thank you so much, ladies, for your information and expertise this evening. Mental Health Matters is a program for informational purposes only. For all mental health questions, consult a mental health professional. The views and opinions expressed on Mental Health Matters do not necessarily reflect the opinions of Red River Radio, LSUS, or its employees. This show is available for download from redriverradio.org. Mental Health Matters is a production of Red River Radio. The producer is Renee Moran, with production assistance provided this evening by Sheila Lawrence, Tim Snell, and Wally Derleth. Support for this program comes from the Knoll Foundation and also from the Community Foundation of North Louisiana, and a gift from Kit and Lisa Gamble. I'm Dr. Shelley Visconti. Thank you for joining us this evening.